ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शांति शांति शांति। लॉर्ड लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमॉर्टैलिटी। ओम पीस 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 बी अनटू ऑल। We were discussing the spiritual progress according to Visishtadvaita or according to the teachings of Ramanuja. There is a wonderful incident how profoundly this teacher had affected one of our great Swamis. Swami Brahmananda was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. He was the president of the order. He was supposed to be a spiritual teacher and give initiation to devotees. But he was extremely reluctant to give initiation to anybody. For a real teacher, the responsibility of guiding, uplifting a disciple is a very difficult task. These days many teachers are there eager to garner disciples. Even they advertise, if you pay so much money, we will become your gurus. But a true guru rarely accepts. He very thoroughly tests the disciple. How thoroughly? Let me tell you an incident. Once a disciple came to Swami Vivekananda. And I would like to be initiated by you. Will you accept me as your guru? He said, yes, provided that you obey me with closed eyes. The disciple said, yes sir, I will do that. If I ask you to climb this tall tree and jump from there, you must jump. And while jumping down, you should not put out your hands to stop your falling down. Can you do that? He said, yes, I will do that. Very good, I will accept you as a disciple. And he accepted him. Now it so happened after a few days, the Belur Math where Swamiji was staying needed a cow. So he called this disciple and told him, go and bring the cow. The disciple went. There is, you know, there is a big Ganges river, very huge at Belur Math. So this man had to cross the bridge and went to the other side of the Ganges, purchased the cow, and he had to bring the cow back by the boat. While entering into the boat, the cow got frightened and jumped into the Ganges. It was struggling to get out of the boat. Now the disciple of Swamiji, Guru said, bring the cow. And he would not like to return without the cow. So this man also jumped into the river, caught hold of the tail of the cow and was swimming along with it. The cow was being rushed by the river. It was taken away because the current was so strong, it was being swept away. And the disciple wouldn't leave the cow. Swamiji and others were able to see the whole thing from the other side and they were trying to shout, you fool, give up the cow and come back, otherwise you may die. Of course, it's not possible to hear their shouting. It's a very wide river. And in front of their eyes, the cow and the disciple both were swept down the river. And here they were thinking, what a stupid fellow. If he can't get the cow, he should save his life and come back. Why did he go that way? They were almost despairing of his life. Towards the evening, the disciple enters into the compound, still holding on the tail of the cow. Swamiji was very angry. You foolish fellow, I asked you to bring the cow, no doubt, but should you endanger your life? He said, "No, sir, my guru told me, bring the cow. I bring the cow." So such is the test. Ordinarily people, real teachers, do not accept the disciples. Swami Brahmananda was very, very reluctant. Up to almost 1916, he was extremely hesitant, reluctant to accept disciples. But in that year, there was a celebration, birthday celebration of Sri Ramakrishna at Belur Mat. And on that day, there was a drama performance in Belur Mat, and that happened to be the life of Ramanuja. There was an incident when Ramanuja was initiated into Vaishnavism. These Vaishnavas are given what is called a famous mantra, Astakshari mantra, 8-syllabled mantra, Om Namo Narayanaya. That is the traditional mantra. And they also brand, the cows are branded like that all over the body. This nama is branded, a kind of like this U-shaped things on the body, various parts of the body. That is one of the part of the ceremony. And this mantra is given to them. Having initiated, the guru told, "Do not reveal this mantra to anyone." The disciple asked him, "What happens if I reveal to somebody?" The guru said, "Those who hear this mantra, they will be liberated, but you yourself will go to hell." Immediately Ramanuja ran to the temple, climbed to the top of the temple and started shouting, "Come here, all those who want to go to heaven, gather here." People came. And he started, "Repeat with me this mantra, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya." And everybody repeated, and this man came down. Meanwhile, the news reached the guru. Immediately after initiation, guru told, "Don't reveal this mantra." The first thing he did was to reveal the mantra. Guru was very angry. "Why did you do that?" Ramanuja said, "Sir, you only told me that anyone who hears this mantra will attain salvation. But what about you? You yourself will go to hell." He said, "If one person goes to hell and so many people get liberated, what does it matter?" Such was his compassion. Throughout his life, Ramanuja was a very compassionate person. So this incident was dramatized at Belur Mat in 1916, and Swami Brahmananda had witnessed it. Next day morning he said, "All those who want to have initiation, call them." He became very, very liberal after that. Anybody who expresses little, come right now, I will give initiation. We were discussing how a man progresses spiritually. We discussed also the first stage in spiritual progress according to Ramanuja is that one must perform every action to please the Lord, not oneself. This is called Karma Yoga. When a man performs in this spirit, his heart gets purified and he gets a glimpse of his own nature, Atma Avalokana. He understands what his real nature is and what is his relationship with God. He understands that he is part of God and he is dependent on God. This is the real spiritual relationship and this is the goal. This dawning of understanding is called Jnana Yoga. And once this Jnana Yoga comes, a man turns into a devotee permanently. Thereafter, he remains a devotee. Now, how many people can perform Karma Yoga? How many people really have the time, the inclination, the capacity, the determination to perform this Karma Yoga? Even of all the yogas, Bhakti Yoga or the path of devotion is considered to be the easiest. It is not really easy, But compared to other yogas, it is a bit easy. But even this bhakti yoga is extremely difficult for ordinary people. And also, what about the people who are not educated? In those days, there was so much of caste system in India, even now, but in those days much more. What about those people who are called outcasts? So Ramanuja has developed a special system called the path of self-surrender, prapatti marga, the path of self-surrender. That is the goal of every devotee. When devotion grows in a man's heart, he surrenders completely, totally to God. And this is the final goal of every being, every jiva. How does one develop this self-surrender? Is it so easy to surrender oneself to God? One has to observe certain rules, certain conditions to be fulfilled. So according to Ramanuja, there are 5 such conditions to be fulfilled. First, a man who wants to surrender himself to God, he must take a vow, I will do only what pleases God. Second, I will refrain from doing what displeases God. Third, I have tremendous faith that God will protect me under all circumstances. And fourth, I accept only God as my protector and no one else. I do not depend upon anybody else. And fifth, that one must place all one's responsibilities squarely on the head of God. That is the final thing. Now, even giving up this responsibility proceeds in 3 stages. The first, all the worries, anxieties, all the burdens, that is what one gives to God. Second, whatever may be the result, whatever may be the circumstances in one's life, whatever one may do, all the results he offers to God. Thirdly, that his very nature itself he offers to God. These are called Bhara Samarpana, Phala Samarpana and Swarupa Samarpana. This is very interesting to me again. Is it also so easy to give up one's responsibility to God? How many times we say, Lord, I surrender myself to you. Do we do that? Do we simply tell to God? We do it. We may not say through words. You know, we go and make pranams to God. What is pranama? Do you know what pranama is? It is telling to God that I surrender myself to you. That is the meaning of pranama. We do that physically, but it's more an exercise than a real mental feeling. And sometimes it's South India, there's what's called sastanga pranama. From the toes to the head, person falls down completely. There is a very nice incident. There was an ashrama in India, there was a center. And early morning, there is a rule that all the inmates should come to the temple and should sit and meditate. One day, a novice came there early in the morning, 4:30. And in South India, it is a rule, sastana means he just lies down flat in front of the Lord. So this novice came, fell flat in front of the Lord with great devotion, and everybody was expecting him to get up. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, he is not getting up at all. So much devotion that he is not getting up even after 10 minutes. Somebody went near and then found out he was snoring. You know, when you get up in the morning, don't come and sit in meditation posture. Better you stand up. Then there is very less chance of your surrendering yourself to God. It's not that easy to surrender one's responsibilities to God. There is this incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. There was a man who was a rebel almost in society, Girish Chandra Ghosh. Sri Ramakrishna asked him, you see, all that you have to do is to remember God once in the morning, once in the evening, and you will get liberation. But this man was a very truthful man, very sincere man. Sri Ramakrishna was telling him, just remember God once in the morning, once in the evening, and that will give you liberation. This man thought over. He said, sir, I can't do it. Ramakrishna asked, why? Because I don't know sometimes when is the morning and when is the evening. He was a drunkard, you see. Then Sri Ramakrishna told him, all right, at least once before taking food, he thought a little more and said, no, I can't do that. Because sometimes I eat food also without knowing that I am eating. Then Sri Ramakrishna said, all right, give all your responsibility to me. This man thought, it is so easy. Just I have to say yes, and immediately all my responsibility is gone, and I can drink and dance and do whatever I like, and Sri Ramakrishna will give me salvation. He said yes, before thinking. If he had thought a little more, he wouldn't have done that. He thought it was the easiest thing to do. And once he said yes, he stuck to it. Soon after that, the habit, I will do this. Immediately Ramakrishna corrected him. Girish, what is this I will do? Have you not given up your power of attorney to God? Don't say, I will do that. Say, if he wills, it will be done. And then Girish Chandra Ghosh was telling later on, brothers, even your spiritual practice has an end. You do some meditation in the morning, meditation in the evening, rest of the time you are free. For me, every breath that I take, I have to examine whether the sense of ego is coming into me or not. Every moment I have to be careful, because I have promised that I give you my responsibility to you. Many years later, this man had a child, and this child died, and he felt like weeping, but he couldn't weep, because he thought, who am I to weep? It is Ramakrishna who has given the child. It is Ramakrishna who has taken the child. Who am I in the middle to weep? He felt like weeping, but he couldn't weep. Later on, such a great transformation had taken place in his life. He became a great saint, one of the greatest men, this Girish Chandra Ghosh. His life was a very dramatic life. He was a drama manager. He used to write dramas, he used to enact dramas, he used to manage dramas. Very successful man. It's not easy to surrender oneself. Self-surrender means completely absorbing oneself of every self-effort. But self-effort is the beginning. First stage in self-surrender is conscious self-effort to see that we do not slip. Self-surrender doesn't mean irresponsibility. Not having responsibility and irresponsibility, these are two totally different things. When we surrender ourselves to God, we become irresponsible. That is opposite of progress in spiritual life. We should give all the responsibility to God. A lot of self-effort is to be done. There are also three stages in this. First, one does effort on one's own. Second, one does effort after the teachings of the scriptures. But there is a third type of effort which is rarely known. One tells to one's teacher, I can't do it, you do it yourself, to the teacher. It's called Acharyanishtha. Swanishtha, Uktinishtha, Acharyanishtha. This is what exactly Holy Mother had done for most of her disciples. There are one or two incidents which are very illustrative of it. Once a novice came to Holy Mother, to Jayarambati, where she was staying. Her birthplace was called Jayarambati. And he was instructed by his guru that he must perform so much japa before eating food. And he sat down and stood in front of his guru, who was Holy Mother, and started doing japa. Holy Mother was fidgeting. For some time she did not say anything. After some time she said, my son, You don't need to do so much japa. Then the disciple said, but you instructed me that I have to do so much japa. He said, yes, when you are at other places, you do it. But when you are with me, you don't know it, do it. But what happens to my spiritual progress? I will do it for you. And the disciple was so happy that he gave up doing japa. Mother told him, you eat and drink and be happy. Another incident was there. It was a Shivaratri day. A devotee came to Holy Mother. And Shivaratri day, one is supposed to fast. And this man was fasting. But his face was very gloomy because he was a very strong young man. He is accustomed to eat 4 or 5 times a day, huge quantities. Then one day's fasting was so difficult. Mother saw his face and said, my son, why don't you eat? He said, no, today is Shivaratri, I can't eat. But mother said, what is wrong in eating? I lose all the merit of fasting. Then Holy Mother said, okay, I will fast for you. You get all the merit, but you can also eat. And he was very happy. He did it. This is called Acharya Nishtha. I will do everything for you. Sri Ramakrishna told his disciples, all that you have to do is to understand who I am, who you are, what our relationship is, and everything will be done for you. Other statement also is there. My children, my devotees, will inherit all my wealth, Aishwarya. So, this is how a person completely annihilates his ego. Self-surrender means merging one's individual self in the universal self, in the will of God. And that path is open to everybody, whether they are literate, illiterate, whether they are doing good things or bad things. Anybody can take to this path, but they must be very, very sincere. So, when a person attains to this stage of self-surrender, he is supposed to have attained the highest stage of spiritual growth. That is according to Visishtadvaita. Now let us have a small break and discuss a completely new type of spiritual practice, and this is according to Lord Buddha. Now you know, Buddhism is called faith. Faith means usually faith in God, faith in some supernormal power, supernatural power, call it God and call it energy or whatever you call it. In that sense, Buddha never talked about God. He never talked about there is a God and there is a self, there is Brahman. He did not talk anything about it. All that he talked was in negative terms. And yet, you know, Buddhism is one of the most powerful religions. It appeals to lots and lots of people today especially. Even though Buddha was born 2500 years back, today Buddhism is on the rise again. Practically every country has got lots of Buddhistic monks, Buddhistic followers of Buddhism. Why does it appeal to people in the modern age? Why does Buddhism attract such a large number of people? I don't know the reason, but I think there are 3 reasons for it. One, Buddhism never talks about God. Second, it places all the responsibility on one's own self. You achieve your own spiritual progress. Third, that it emphasizes so much on meditation or mindfulness. And you will get results immediately. Vipassana, Zen Buddhism, and various types of schools of Buddhism are becoming very popular today. It's very scientific type of religion. Buddha was one of the most rational minded saint or prophet in this world. He never claimed himself that I am a very special person. He said everybody can become Buddha. Buddha is not a person. Buddha is the name of a state, a spiritual state. Buddha was born 2500 years back. He was a prince and he was brought up in all luxury. He was married to a beautiful woman. He had a lovely child, and then one day his conversion came when he was young. You know how this conversion came? When he was born, his name was Gautama. When he was born, astrologers predicted either he would become the greatest emperor of this world, or he would become the greatest spiritual personage of this world. Now his father was a worldly man, good man, but worldly man. He wanted his son also to become a prince, later on take up the kingdom and continue the lineage. So he thought, if the astrologers are right, he might become a monk. He might give up the home and run away. I do not want him to do that. So what is the way to prevent a man from becoming spiritual? Bring him up in luxury. And when he grows up a little, get him married. This very common ploy Indian parents, our devotees adopt. When they come to the Vedanta centers, they are all praised for the Swamis. But they will not allow their children to come nearer, anywhere nearer the Swamis, lest they may be influenced and become monks or nuns. So his father surrounded him. See, this boy had never any experience of unhappiness, because it is unhappiness which brings dispassion. It is unhappiness which leads to inquiry. So unhappiness which will lead ultimately to a spiritual life. So when he grew up, he was a very intelligent boy. Very able boy, very skillful person. He requested his father, "You know, I have never seen the outside city. You always kept me only confined here within the palace. I would like to see what is the outside world like." Now his father could no longer deny him, because he was not a child any longer. He arranged for a trip outside the city, outside his palace. But he took care to see that no unpleasant sight would ever confront this young prince. So he was taken in a beautiful chariot. The king asked everybody, that only young men and women, beautifully dressed, will line up the streets and he will see only pleasant sights. But when God wills something, what can man do? So when the chariot was going, suddenly he saw an old man. And Buddha, this man never saw an old man. I don't know what his father was doing, whether he was putting on black color to his, in those days beards and others used to be there. And naturally he would have been 40, 50 years old. So he must be having gray hair and all that. What he was doing, I don't know. Anyway, he never saw such an old man, decrepit old man. He was shocked. First time confronting in old age was a great shock. For us it's not a shock, because we see the sight everywhere. And Gautama asked, "Who is this creature?" And his charioteer told him, "He is a man like you and me. Why did he become like this?" "Well, prince, everybody has to become like that. And this is called old age. With age the body becomes like this." And this boy did not know that one day he also will become. So he thought, "Will I also become old?" And his charioteer said, "Yes." And the chariot passed on. Then came a diseased man, a palsied man, full of sores, full of spots. "Who is this?" "Said, this is a man suffering from a terrible disease." "Oh, is the human body subject to this kind of diseases?" "Yes, practically everybody would suffer." "Will I also suffer?" "Yes." And the chariot passed a little later. Then he saw four people carrying something. He said, "What is this?" He said, "This is a dead body." "Oh, will people die?" "Yes." "And will I die?" "Yes. One day you also have to die." And that brought about terrible agony, sorrow in the heart of that young man. Then he passed a little further, and then he saw under a tree that a middle-aged man with ochre robes, shaven head, full of shining face, serenity itself. Gautama asked, "Who is this?" and his charioteer said, this is a man who renounces the world in search of a spiritual solution, in search of overcoming old age, disease and death. He attained to that blissful stage, and that's why he is so full of peace and happiness and serenity. It is said that very night this young prince bade goodbye to his wife and baby, renounced the world for 6 years, performed superhuman austerities. He got training under various teachers. Nobody could show him the way to enlightenment. And at last he struck on his own, and he sat down under a tree, it is called Bodhi tree or the tree of illumination, and decided, I shall not get up from this seat until I get illumination. And it is so said that very night he got the illumination. He became Buddha. Gautama became the Buddha. Then he came out and started preaching this wonderful discovery that he made. And it was said that for up to 80 years of age he lived. Buddha's life was so inspiring. He had many, many thousands of disciples. Thousands had become monks because of his influence. Even he gave sannyasa to his monastic vows to his own son. That was a wonderful story. You know that? After many years, he came to his own palace, and his father went out to receive him. Suddhodana was still alive, and he invited him to come and have nice party in his palace. Buddha said, no, I am a monk. I only beg food and eat. When he was passing in the street, and by the time his son was grown up, his son saw this huge crowd. People came in thousands to see this former prince, but now a famous illumined teacher. And his son Rahula saw out of the window, asked his mother, who is this man? And his mother told him, he is your father. Go and claim your inheritance. And this boy ran to his father, said, father, where is my inheritance? And Buddha said, here is my inheritance. Immediately shaved off his head and made him his own disciple, gave him monastic vows. So as Buddha said, what better treasure can a father pass on to his child than this eternal treasure, immortal treasure? Such was the influence of this great teacher. When he was dying, his close disciple and person who was serving him for so many years started weeping. And Buddha called him and said, Ananda, why are you weeping? What did you learn from me all these years? Oh, teacher, you are passing away. Who is there to inspire us, to guide us hereafter? Then Lord Buddha says, you have not learnt anything from me. Buddha is not a person. How many times I taught you that? Buddha is a state of illumination. Be lamps unto yourselves. Work out your own salvation. Nobody can give you salvation. Only you will have to work out on yourself. This is the main emphasis of Buddhism. Nobody else can give us illumination. There are no gods who can help us, who can bestow their grace. Buddha never talks about God, never talks about the self, always talks about the transitory nature of this world. So what was that that Buddha had discovered? He called it that his noble teaching and this most excellent teaching. It's all very scientific and very objective and very impersonal. First sermon that Buddha had given to his 5 disciples was this: I have discovered the solution to the problems of life. There are 4 Aryan noble truths. What are these truths? First truth is that life is full of suffering. Existence itself is misery. Misery is of 2 types. Not to get what one desires and to get what one doesn't desire. There is also another type of misery, you know that? To get what one desires. Do you know the story of Lulu? You don't remember? I told you many times. It's a wonderful story. A man went to a lunatic asylum. The director of the asylum came to take him round, and they went. There was a padded cell. One man was sitting there in a corner and moaning, "Lulu, Lulu, Lulu." And this man asked, "What is the matter? He's always crying, Lulu, Lulu. Who is Lulu?" "Oh, Lulu was the girl who jilted him." All right. They passed on to the next cell, and it was thickly padded. The man was running round the cell beating, "Lulu, Lulu." This man, visitor was intrigued. "Oh, is Lulu also the cause of this man's insanity?" He said, "Yes. This was the man whom that girl married." You see, sometimes to get what one desires is also the cause of great suffering. Buddha said, to be united with what one dislikes and to be separated with what one likes or loves, that's misery. This samsara, he used to call samsara, this world, full of misery. Life is full of misery. Is it true? Life is full of misery. Is it true? Is there no happiness? Is there no positive thing in this world? Buddha was speaking from a spiritual point of view. In this world there is some happiness, some unhappiness, there is no doubt. But most of the major portion of the samsara is only full of misery, trouble, worries, responsibility. There is no doubt about it. If you want to know, sit quietly, take up a piece of paper, make two columns, happiness and unhappiness. And write down how much time you are happy and how much time you are unhappy. Find out, you will see very soon that it is terrible, the amount of unhappiness. But still, we don't recognize it. Why? Because we are ignorant. We are foolish. If life is not that happy thing at all, always there is lots of trouble. The past is dead. We don't know about the future. We are always worried about the future. Now a man was drinking. Another man asked him, "Do you drink because of to forget the past?" He said, "No, I drink to forget the future." Though we don't give so much, always there is a kind of worry, the kind of anxiety is there. If you really sit and think about it, many times we don't think, we just pass every minute by itself. But there is a kind of sorrow in a corner of our mind, there is no doubt about it. But from a spiritual point of view, why is he telling life is full of misery? Not only because this life is full of suffering and worries and all that, but more importantly, there is tremendous amount of happiness, freedom, which is ours. Buddhism or any religion is not a pessimistic thing. There is something positive which we are missing. The great souls who have realized the truth, they are always trying to inspire us. Take up to spiritual life. Pray to God. Give up this world. Why are they telling us to give up the world? Not because it's only full of suffering, but there is a tremendous amount of joy and happiness to be had. Because we do not know about it, we miss it. And they know that it is there. Only if we put forth a little effort, it is to be ours. But even to come to this understanding, one has to suffer a great lot. So this is a spiritual teaching. Buddha's teaching is not a pessimistic teaching. Many times I heard people saying, Buddhism is full of pessimism, Swami. It always emphasizes on suffering.
That's not true. He is only telling what is truth. There is tremendous amount of freedom, joy, bliss, which we are missing, and we are suffering here. The first noble truth he discovered is life is full of suffering, existential suffering. To be born is to suffer, both for the mother and for the child, and to grow up is suffering. When we are young children, we don't want to grow up because we lose our attraction for the toys is so great. Then when we are young, we think that this is life, if everything goes all right. But when we are becoming middle-aged, we hate. No, that's why this fashion industry is one of the most profitable industries in the world, cosmetic industry. You know that? Because we don't want to become middle-aged, we don't want to become old. At least we don't want to appear to be middle-aged or old. I don't know, it's a woman, you know. It's, how old are you? Swami, never ask a woman of your age. Always, you know. Why? What is wrong with that? Tell what is your age. What is wrong with that? Life is full of suffering. What is the root cause of suffering? Tanha, Krishna, craving. Craving. If there is nothing wrong to be in this world, but if there is craving, then that creates problem. Craving for sense pleasures. Craving for avoiding all problems, all anxieties, which in any case we can't do it. So this desire or craving, tanha, is a very subtle term. We know many times that there's this cause of our suffering. We can't give it up. This biggest problem in this world, always, especially in these days, is that we know many times the cause of our problem. And we also know we must not think about such things. But we can't give up these things, you know. Worries. Terrible worries. People go to psychologists, psychiatrists, do many things. But they are not able to get rid of the suffering. So many diseases come because of this wrong type of thinking, you know, psychosomatic diseases they call. Have you heard about psychosomatic health? Very few of you have heard about psychosomatic health. Only psychosomatic diseases you have heard, because they are most prevalent. Wrong thinking can bring on terrible suffering. So many, this blood pressure, ulcers, neurosis, all these are the direct result of our wrong thinking. To control this mind, to think rightly, is not such an easy thing. So there we can live in this world, but there should not be craving. Craving is the root cause of our suffering. Buddha had lived in this world for 80 years, but he did not suffer. He attained illumination. After attaining illumination, he lived for many years, probably about 50 years or 40 years he lived. And how did he live? Without any worry. Have you seen Buddha's image? How serene it is, you know. No gods and goddess face I have ever seen, which brings so much of peace. The very image of Buddha is so peaceful. So, he had gotten rid of this craving. And if we want to get rid of suffering, we have to destroy this craving. And that is the only way to get rid of the suffering. That is the third noble truth. The first noble truth, life is full of suffering. The second noble truth, suffering comes as a result of craving. And third, the way to get rid of this suffering is to destroy this craving. And fourth noble truth is, there is an eightfold way of how to get rid of, practical way of getting rid of this craving. What is the eightfold way? There are eight precepts he has given us, and if we practice it, we progress spiritually, and then we get rid of craving, and then we become free. This eightfold way is again divided into three categories. That is how spiritual progress takes place according to Buddha. The first two precepts, they are called prajna or wisdom. What are these two precepts? The first thing is right understanding. Do we understand life in its right way? Do we know what life is? For most of us, we are like sleepwalkers. We go through the motions without knowing about life. At least if we have some understanding of life, our suffering can become a lot less. What is right understanding? Right understanding is to think about these four noble truths and accept them with understanding. That life is full of suffering. We are all saying, yes, it is true, but do we really understand it? In a spiritual way, intellectually, yes. In a spiritual way, do we really understand it? No, we don't understand. Hindus call this world as Maya. Everybody is talking about Maya. How wonderful it is, you know. There is a story in Bhagavatam, the story of Prahlada, the devotee who devoted himself to Lord Narayana. And his father was a demon. There were two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha was killed by Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu, his brother, was full of rage. And he went to the sorrowing wives of his brother. And he was giving sermon. You know, this world is full of suffering. This is all Maya. One day here man is there, and next day he is not there. So you should not grieve. A demon giving sermon to the wives of his own brother. Right after giving the sermon, he went to perform austerities with the purpose of killing Lord Vishnu. Anybody can give sermons. It's one thing to think, to talk about these things, to think about these things. Do people understand? No, they don't understand. Sri Ramakrishna has a way of saying, God laughs on two occasions. When two brothers divide a piece of land, and they say, this portion is mine, and that portion is yours. God is laughing when the whole world belonging to me. These foolish fellows are saying that this belongs to me and this belongs to you. On another occasion, when a child is dying and its mother is weeping, and the doctor comes and tells, don't worry, you give me good fee, I will cure your son. God is telling, I am about to take away this fellow, and the doctor is telling that he is going to cure him. Do we understand these things? Does a doctor understand that curing is not in his hands? He can only try. Whether the person is cured or he lives or he dies, it is in the hands of God or in the hands of fate. He has nothing to do with that. Good doctors, they understand it. If you go and ask a good doctor, a man of wisdom, that can you cure me? He says, I cannot cure you. I can do what I know is right. But cure is in the hands of God. A good doctor always tells that. So intellectual understanding will not do. And then understanding also must bring on tremendous determination. Right determination. I must work out my own salvation. I must follow these spiritual precepts. And I must obtain illumination and right understanding. Even to understand and to make up one's mind strongly, this is, according to Buddhism, is called prajna. Then the next five precepts are called shila, or practical spirituality. How to put this understanding and determination into practice. What are those? First thing is right speech. What is right speech? Abstaining from slandering, using harsh language, talking vainly. This abstaining from these three is called right speech. And its opposite, talk only that which is dear, that which is beneficial, that which is sweet. What do we lose if we talk sweetly? A few days back I came to know a man, one of our known men, he died. And another devotee
went to console the person who the wife died, and they to console the husband, and lots of people gathered there, and it came out that when this lady went to the doctor was shouting at her, "Don't you understand that you are not going to be cured? There is no hope in your case. Get it into your head. Nobody can cure you. You are going to die." She was in an advanced, terminal cancer. It's true that there was no hope. But that's not the way to talk about to the patient. It is true. What he talked was truth. There was no hope for her. But the way he has put it, it was probably that killed her much sooner. I don't know. It to abstain from harsh language, from slandering and vain talk, and cultivating the opposite. That is called right speech. Right action. Abstaining from killing, stealing, unlawful sex, lying and taking intoxicants. This is called panchashila. So one must be very careful about killing. Right living. We have to live in this world. So we have to earn our livelihood. But according to Buddhism, five trades should be avoided. You know what are those five trades? Trading in arms, selling guns, knives and other things. Trading in living beings, trading in flesh, trading in intoxicating drinks, drugs and poison. The best profits come from these trades. Best profits. And how can such a person ever progress in spiritual life? Right living means that which should never harm, even indirectly. A man who is selling a gun may tell, "I'm not killing anybody," but you are also indirectly responsible. Big nations who are rich, rich nations, how are they becoming rich? If you find out, one of the most major causes of their prosperity is this arms industry, or what you call military industry, defense weapons, rockets, satellites, all these weapons used in warfare, isn't it? So these five trades should be avoided. And then right effort. Right effort is to avoid the arising of the causes of samsara and to develop the way to nirvana. What is right effort? We understand. I must practice the spiritual precepts. But we become slack. A few days enthusiastically we take up something, and then slowly the enthusiasm drain away from us. But have a little effort. Every day I will do it whether I like it or not. That grit, that determination. That is the right effort, not to be depressed, not to be emotionally over-jubilant. All those things have got to be avoided. Right attentiveness and right meditation is called samadhi. If a person has right prajna and practices these precepts, which is called shila, then the result would be samadhi. Samadhi, the lower samadhi is called right attentiveness. Not a single second a man's mind is absent. It always knows what a man is talking, what he is doing. We become aware of every one of our thoughts, our speech, our action. This is what is called vipassana. Pay close attention to whatever we do. Then that corrects lot of mistakes which can occur and lead us to lot of trouble later on. Then ultimately right meditation. Right meditation is what transforms our entire character, and that leads to illumination. According to Buddha, this eightfold way, it is also called the middle way, is the way to progress spiritually and to attain illumination. And this spiritual progress takes place in three stages. The first stage is right understanding and right determination. The second stage is to control our day-to-day life, to pay attention to whatever we are doing and make right effort, which leads us to the right concentration or attentiveness, and ultimately to right meditation,
then illumination comes, samadhi comes, or according to Buddha, one attains nirvana. All the samsara is extinguished. What happens? You put fire to the whole world? No, you put fire to your craving and illumination comes. Mind becomes clear. Truth is seen as it is, not as it appears to be. And thereafter, man becomes completely free, a jivan mukta. This is the teaching of Lord Buddha. We shall discuss spiritual progress according to tantras in our next class, which is very interesting. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.